Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. The India we see in books, movies, and television today feels like an exotic place, certainly nothing like southeastern Wisconsin. But the India of Betsy Woodman's novels might seem more familiar to a Wisconsinite and, at the same time, exotic to people living in that country today. The novels are set in a small Indian town in the 1960s, a town that has plenty in common with small towns here and much of the world over. Woodman is a New Hampshire native, but spent significant time in India in her youth, and while she is not the model for her protagonist, Jana Beebe, the setting is very much inspired by her own experiences. The latest novel is called Emeralds Included, and Betsy Woodman stopped by the studio on her recent trip through Milwaukee. It's very nice to meet you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
So this is the third Jana Beebe novel, and while they all take place in India, this is not the India that is so often portrayed today in popular culture, the impossibly crowded Mumbai, it's not the Taj Mahal. Give us a sense for this town where Jana lives.
It's the 1960s, which means that there are half the number of people in India that there are today, so that automatically makes it a little different. And this is a hill station. The town is a hill station.
And what's the significance of a hill station?
Hill stations were resorts during the British time where the British went to escape the heat. And after independence, they evolved into full-fledged tourist centers. And so today, the town that this is modeled on is a very bustling center, and it's just a very, very popular resort. And in Jana's time, India's already independent, and there already is some of this tourist traffic, plus a few leftovers of the Europeans and the British from the days before.
She is what people would generally refer to as an expatriate.
Well, she's an Indian citizen, actually, in the book, because she has grown up in India and only had one little period of her life when she lived away in Scotland, was miserable, and did everything she could to come back to India as soon as possible. So she's more like one of those staying on characters. And she's very Indian, actually. She's not going to live anywhere else. And that's just where she feels home. That's where she wants to be.
And as you say, this is the early 1960s. India is starting to, but hasn't really yet come into its own on the world stage.
It's already pretty important in that India is trying to be the non-aligned nation. This is the height of the Cold War. So they do not want to kowtow to anyone. They will have friendly relations with the Russians, with the USSR and with the USA. They will not be dictated to. And they also want to be seen as a moral force.
And as you say, this town is based on a real-life hill station, correct?
Yeah.
Jana, however, if I read correctly, is not necessarily based on anyone in particular.
She's totally fictional. She just sort of marched into my brain one day with the parrot on her shoulder, and there she was.
Was this the India of your own youth?
Yes, it was. It was. I went at age 6 and stayed – well, my family stayed for 10 years. And so all my formative years were there in elementary school and most of high school.
What was that like for a 6-year-old from New Hampshire?
That was what was real life. India was what was familiar, safe, comfortable. And it was the States that was exotic and a little scary and not very familiar to us. So, India was where we lived.
Well, but what was it about India in particular? If my research is correct, you also spent some time in France and in Zambia, but you are not writing about those places.
Well, I was in India for a lot longer. Also, I think India, once it grabs you, doesn't let you go. And that can still remain true 10, 20, 30 years later. And
what was it that spurred your parents to move there?
Oh, my dad worked first for the United States Information Service, which was the precursor of the USAA. My mother had trained as a ballet dancer, and when we got there, she made friends with our next-door neighbors who were dancers and film actresses and performed and later had a ballet school.
Did they see it as an adventure in any way?
They did. They were small town New England kids. My dad from New Hampshire, my mom from Massachusetts. They wanted to see the world. This opportunity to go to India came up. And in those days, it was a lot further away, a lot more exotic. The relatives were scandalized. And my mom had two little girls, 6 and 4, and she was 7 months pregnant with another. And the relatives said, you're not going to go have a baby in India. She said, a lot of people have had babies in India.
Well, and so in this latest installment in the series, Jana is anxiously awaiting a visit from her son and his fiancée,
right,
who are still in the U.K. It strikes me that Jack, her son, and Katerina were kind of seen as celebrities by the people in the town.
Oh, yeah. They were given a big welcome, which would probably have happened.
Well, I was wondering if they're in a way, as New Englanders who had transplanted there, whether you were in any way a celebrity.
Well, my parents were very, very social, so they just had a gift for making friends. And my dad hated the sort of Cold War stuff and said, our job is to make friends. And what could be more fun? So he went at it. They went at it with a lot of enthusiasm. And because, you know, we met the wonderful movie stars, that just sort of rubbed off. And people always treated us with incredible hospitality.
Well, and that was one of the things that strikes me about the many Indians that inhabit this book is that there is a certain, it's not really a deference, but it's a hospitality is a good way to put it.
It is hospitality. And there is an expression in India, guest is God. So you're going to treat them well.
Jana obviously could go back to Scotland if she wants. But as you said, she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
I wonder if Jana's staying in India helps you in a way stay there.
Well, Jana rehabilitated me to India. I hadn't been for a while. I since leaving at age 16, I'd been back a couple of times and I had read hundreds of books about India. And then when I got this book contract, I really plunged into the research. And the interesting part was that today you can research something set in the 1960s much, much better than you could have in 1965, just because all the electronic resources are there. Netflix with all the 1950s and 1960s Indian movies. I became a sort of a Hindi film addict. And, you know, old BBC archives. We're living in the golden age of research. So,
did you find that the real India of the 1960s, as you researched it, mm-hmm. lined up with your memories of the place?
The real India, there is no one real India. You know, there were
But the mind tends to you know, you look back on things through rose-colored lenses is the cliche.
Yeah,
Did you find as you look back into what times were actually like at the time you were mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. did they line up with your memories?
I think a lot of the images did bring things back and did make it clear and also gave me a feeling of authentication, right? Emails I've gotten from the Indian audience, the books are also published in India, say, oh, yes, this is right. This is how I remember it, too. So, yeah, I've just gotten a feeling, oh, phew, I'm relieved that, I didn't blow it.
When you talk to your readers, I mean, most of them, I would imagine, at least the ones who are reading it in this country, mm-hmm. did not grow up in India.
Right.
What is it that appeals to them? Why do they connect with this series of novels?
Well, I've tried to make it actually an easy entry into India, and I do use some Indian words, say Hindi and Urdu, and there's a glossary.
I found myself consulting it a number of times.
Yeah. But there's a lot that's kind of universal. What's a small town? People, even the ones who live in cities, many of them have a little hankering for that small town in their imagination. And so it's a place where intimacy is possible, eccentricity is possible, and everyone knows everything.
I was just going to say, you know, whether you're in India or in Scotland or in the United States, in a small town, people know each other's business.
Right. My dad used to say about New Hampshire that you learn about your indiscretions on the way home from having committed them.
We should talk about Jana's parrots.
Oh.
Whose name I'm going to have you say.
Mr. Ganguly.
He is kind of comic relief through this.
He's sort of comic relief. He's the jester in the medieval drama. He's the little powerless guy who speaks truth to power more or worse.
He has learned the word for stupid in this
book. He learns the word for stupid, yeah. Actually, he knows how to address the Muslim inhabitants with a salam and the Hindu inhabitants with a namaste. And he's got good instincts, social instincts. But he takes likes and dislikes. And
he has pretty good taste, as it turns out.
Well, we like the people he likes.
Speaking of that, you know, Jana aside, you obviously write about a lot of these characters, even the ones with sort of foibles, with a great deal of affection. Who are your favorite characters that inhabit these books?
Well, the tailor, Feroz, is one of my very most favorite. He's the philosopher who writes little notes down in his notebook along with the measurements of his his customers. And I do love him. He was traumatized during the partition of India and Pakistan, so he doesn't want to take a train trip. And let's see what else. He can't quite keep his family under control. His nephew wants to be a singer for the movies. And even though he doesn't like all these things, he does manage to forgive and, accept and tolerate it all.
Jana popped into your mind how long ago?
About 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, yeah.
And so you have been presumably living these books in the time since. And I know Jana is not autobiographical, but I wonder if there is any sense of life imitating fiction. Do you feel like now that Jana is part of your life, you have Jana moments?
Probably do have Jana moments. I sometimes think, now what would Jana do? She's a lot more adventurous than I am. So, I tend to be a little conservative. And they go, now, don't be a wimp. Jana would just go ahead and do this.
So do you have additional Jana adventures already coalescing in your mind?
Actually, there are tons of subplots that didn't make it into any of these three books. They're there, and who knows when the characters are going to rattle their cages.
It must be something, though, to get feedback on these books from readers in India.
Fantastic. That's just been a thrill, an absolute thrill. And especially readers of all ages. I can tell the people who grew up during the 50s and 60s, okay, they're nostalgic, and that's fine. But the younger ones like it too, so that's really fun for me.
It's another universal that kids and grandchildren are always interested in how their parents and grandparents grew up.
I guess. And a lot of younger Indians have a bit of nostalgia for this time. They think of it as a golden age when people were idealistic and so forth. And you see a hint of this in Indian movies sometimes too.
Can you imagine Jana existing anywhere besides India? And clearly she's
not really. She is so Indian. And her household and her neighborhood. And there's just all this diversity and, Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Parsis, Sikhs, this whole gamut of people.
Well, it is a delightful world to be immersed in. And it was delightful to chat with you. Thank you so much.
Delightful for me, too. Thank you, Mitch.
Betsy Woodman's latest novel is called Emeralds Included. It is the third in her series of novels featuring the character Jana Beebe. Betsy Woodman lives in New Hampshire. She was in Milwaukee recently for an event at Boswell Book Company. That's going to do it for the Monday edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich. So great to have you listening today, and I sure hope you'll tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, your NPR station in Milwaukee. Keep listening. Coming your way in just about an hour's time at 12 noon. It's Here and Now from NPR and WBUR in Boston. But right now, we have Fresh Air from NPR coming your way next. It's 11 o'clock.